irregular white stones lined the side of the road, marking off the edge of the ravine. There was even the remains of a white line painted down the center of the trail. The nine men and women walked slowly along, cautiously checking all around them.
What in the great fire so funny, Doc?
My apologies, sir, but the sight of us all stepping as if we walked upon the shells of eggs is risible. You see, the fog, with its claws and its teeth, will have kept everyone out for 100 years, and those within are surely deceased. So, where is the threat?
We're in. Somebody else might be in.
Only if they were watching and have followed us. And I doubt there are many people in this part of the Darks.
Now what about them feathers and the skull and all that stuff?
That silenced Doc's laughter. Though the wind kept howling about them, the ferocious cold of the past few days was gone, and not one of them put up their hoods again. Doc kept one hand on his ancient hat. The air was notably fresher, and Ryan noticed that no one was sweating now, as they had been in the presence of the fog. Oki strode forward to join Ryan at the front of the group. Her dark hair was tied back like Abe's, and she kept one hand always near the butt of her pistol.
What do you figure we'll find in this stockpile? Gas? Bombs? More guns?
Quién sabe.
What?
Means who knows. Picked it up from a Mex mutie down south. But whatever's there has to be good to be guarded like that.
And nobody to stop us.
Ryan spun on his heel in time to see Abe dropping to his knees, hands to his throat. His neck was pierced clean through with the shaft of an arrow, tipped with bright red feathers. Hennings and Christie were first to the stricken man, while the others, weapons drawn, faced around, their blazing eyes seeking the enemy. But there was nobody to be seen. The cliffs towered above them, with pockets of snow scattered here and there. The road wound beneath them, and the sheer drop to the river was still at their other flank. Ahead, somewhere, was the mythical redoubt.
Where?
Arrow came from up there. He's behind us. Or they're behind us.
Ryan moved to stand where Christie cradled Abe in her arms. The shaft, with its barbed tip, still stuck through his throat at a grotesque angle, blood trickling from both sides. The shaft was made of some sort of aluminum compound. It was streaked crimson. The feathers were the same kind as they had seen on the warning totems.
How is he?
Bad, Ryan. Bad.
It doesn't hurt but a blasted arrow, for Newt's sake. Be funny if...
Another shaft came slicing through the air, pinging off the road and vanishing over the edge into the gorge beyond. A third arrow came, striking a spark as it struck the stone, missing Christie by a hand span.
Got to move, Ryan. They'll pick us off.
Leave him. I'm sorry, Abe.
The rules of the War Wag had always been simple. If you can save the wounded, then you do it. But if you can't, you can't. If it had been some muties, especially Stickies, then Ryan would have put a bullet through the man's temple. It looked as if Abe was dying, but there was a chance the attackers might save him. Better than no chance at all.
Let's go!
Ryan strode ahead to lead the way, and a zigzag dodging run up the road. Immediately the arrows came whispering after him, biting into the track. But by moving forward and swerving, none of them was hit. Ryan risked a glance over his shoulder at a bend in the trail, seeing to his shock that there were about 40 or 50 men after them, most with bows. Oddly, not a single one was carrying a rifle. If one of them had a light MG or even a machine pistol, it could have sprayed the road and wiped half of Ryan's force away. They appeared to be short, squat men, wearing what looked at a glance to be leather. They reached a point where a fall of white rock had half closed the road.
We could hold them here.
They might get above us. Keep going!
Another 100 paces, and the arrows were less frequent. And around another turn of the trail, there it was. The trail widened to a huge plateau, wide enough for a dozen war wags to turn in comfort, with the stubby remains of a metal fence ringing it. And at the far end was a high gate, made of gleaming metal, showing through peeling paint. All around, on posts, on the walls, and on the gate itself, were the faded, illegible remains of warning signs and cautions. Ryan had seen enough stockpiles in his time to be certain that this was what they were after.
That's it!
The gate was corrugated metal, showing that it folded back. Oki was there first, reaching and tugging at the handle, polished by the years of tearing gales.
It's locked!
Hen was there next, throwing his great strength to help her, but they failed to move it. The man called Finnegan and JB were next, all heaving and straining at the door, trying to get it open. Hun and Christie, her overalls sodden with Abe's blood, arrived to help, but there was not enough room for them to get a grip. Ryan brought up the rear, supporting Doc, whose legs had gone so that he sagged like a straw man.
Abandon me, good sir. I slow you down.
Doc, you set me straight on the fog. You're too good a source of information to leave behind.
Here they come.
Christy, you and Hen keep trying the door. Watch for Doc. The rest, let's chill the bastards.
With the redoubt at their backs, the door towering sheer above them, there was no longer anywhere to run. JB dropped to his knees and readied his favorite Steyr AUG 556mm. The attackers had paused at the head of the trail, gathered in a group. They looked like close to 50, all male. They had dark skins, and their clothes were fringed and beaded in a way that recalled the mysterious stranger at the time the traitor had gone walking out into eternity. Some of them carried spears, and some hatchets. Most had bows, either in their hands or slung across their shoulders.
Come on, you sons of hell-sucking bitches! Dying time's arrived!
No blasters! We can take them all easy as farting!
I figure them for Indians. Some old tribe trapped up here, safe from raiders.
What are Indians?
One of the squad figures started to run toward them, waving a long stick decorated with a double row of white and brown feathers. None of his fellows had moved, but stood watching him as he charged at the small group. Doc was equally fascinated, and he pulled himself upright to observe, having collapsed as they had reached the door.
Upon my soul, a warrior of the Sioux Nation, eager to count coup upon us. How very, very something or other.
The man was 100 paces away, the wind tugging at his long braided hair, ruffling the thongs that fringed his jacket and trousers. Still nobody opened fire, unable to believe such lunatic courage or stupidity. The Indian was less than 40 running steps from them when Oki leveled her M16 and put a round through the middle of his face. He stopped as though he'd run into an invisible wall, legs flailing in front of him, his trunk flying through the air until he landed on his back. His arms kept twitching for several seconds.
Stupid bastard. They look mad, but nobody else is charging. Hey, they're leaving.
Or at least going around that corner and out of sight.
Next move?
We get the door open.
Won't move. Christy tried. She... Well, look at the handle.
The metal had become twisted and warped. Christy leaned against the door, her face white as the snow. She was aware of them all staring at her, and managed a thin smile.
Can't do it. I tried. Used all I knew.
Ryan blinked at the sight. To distort the metal of the lock like that took unbelievable strength. Then he remembered the way she had suddenly freed herself of her bonds when Strasser had held them prisoner. And he wondered about that amazing red hair that had seemed to move of its own volition. For the first time he realized that the girl had to be some kind of mutie. And he had made love to her.
Without blasters, they can't get at us. If we can't get into this joint, then we'll go back down. In the war wagon, off safe as armor.
Not that easy.
He's right, hon. Think about it some. There's a lot of them. We've seen maybe 50. Could be 100 more. They know the darks.
We can blast them away.
Not if you can't see them, hon. Where are they now? Waiting for us? Up on the cliffs? Maybe they're moving right now, right above us.
Night's still some way off, Ryan. We keep careful. We can get ready. Then make a run for the war wag.
It was possible. Perhaps the best plan they had. So they rested, snatching a quick meal and mouthful of water. Doc was in poor shape, and he dropped asleep while they ate. Ryan and JB looked at the massive gate to the stockpile, but there was no way in. Most of the other stockpiles they had found were much smaller, and the entrances yielded to small charges of dynamite. This was heavy-gauge metal that even high-explosive grenades were not going to dent. About 3/4 of an hour had passed since they saw the last of the Indians. Then, two things happened at once. Stones and boulders began to fall around them, rolled from much higher up above the entrance door. And the Indians reappeared with what must have been the oldest piece of field artillery in all of Deathlands.
What the hell?
It's a cannon! The sort they used in the war between the North and South about 250 years ago. Must have come from some museum.
Will it shoot? Hell, what does it shoot?
Probably shoots a metal ball that might be filled with explosive. If it works, then we're over the falls without a boat, folks.
It works.
There was a vast plume of smoke from the bell-like mouth of the ancient piece, and they all ducked as the shell came toward them. It struck the cliff about 50 paces to their left and 20 paces high, showering them with splinters of white rock.
Ye gods, let us get within!
Sure. You open her up, Doc, and we'll hold them off with blasters.
They're getting ready again, Ryan.
Let them have it. Try and pick them off around that gun.
They got the cover. We got nuke shit nothing.
Oki fired her M16 with rhythmic ease, the bullets skittering and ricocheting all around the heavy metal shield of the artillery piece. Two of the attackers threw up their arms and toppled over, but the rest withdrew around the bend in the trail to safety. It was a standoff, but the odds were greatly against Ryan Carter and his friends. They had no cover at all, nowhere to go. If the Indians could control the aim of their cannon, they could blow them away. As he poured lead toward the big gun, it occurred to Ryan that their only hope was going to be a charge across the flat ground, under fire from the arrows. It was close to suicide, but it was all there was. He felt a finger tap his shoulder. He spun around, nearly knocking Doc over with the barrel of his lapa.
Excuse me, do you wish me to open the door?
Grinning with his peculiarly perfect teeth, Doc stepped with a long stride to the side of the door and reached inside a small square panel set at shoulder height.
Shall we go in?
This time the gunners had overcompensated, and the massive ball, pitching low and bouncing, narrowly missed the far end of the great door.
Next time they'll get it right, Ryan. If we don't...
J.B. stopped as he heard the sonorous grating that came from the top and bottom of the huge gateway into the redoubt. For a second of frozen time, nothing happened. Then a dark slit appeared at the right edge, near where Doc was still pulling a lever inside the panel. It continued to open until there was a crack wide enough for them to slip through.
Inside!
Hen went first, then Finnegan, struggling to squeeze into the darkness. Oki and Christy were next. Hun waved at Ryan to go, but he gestured angrily with a stubby barrel of his gun, and she ran in.
Now us, Doc. You done real good.
Doc vanished through the gap, and Ryan followed him in, pausing to look back. He was shocked to see how many attackers there were now. Better than 100 men, all racing toward them. He gave a quick burst that sent 6 or 7 tumbling like disjointed dolls, blood bursting into the cold air and smoking on the ground from the scattered corpses. He ran through the entrance and joined the others.
You can close it up, Doc, right?
The yellowed eyes turned in curiously to him, veiled as though beeswax lay across them, and Ryan glimpsed the closeness of Doc's insanity. But the threads held together a while longer.
Indeed. There's the panel.
How come these bastard mongrels didn't get this open?
Code, my dear Titian girl. A simple 352 to enter and a 253 to shut her up tight again. Like so.
He waved his hand like a magician pulling off a particularly clever trick. Although this particular audience had no idea what a magician was. Doc's answer raised a whole mass of questions, but now was not the time. Ryan, with the door grinding tight shut behind him, had a chance to take in their surroundings. Of all the stockpiles he had seen, this one was the largest and the strangest. Others had been what the name suggested, places where enormous, even staggering quantities of food and supplies were stored, like mighty warehouses packed with who knew what. But this was different. Dim lights came into hesitant, flickering life, and Ryan figured they had tripped some kind of beam, still active, perhaps of uranium, that switched on the electrics of the place. The room was, in fact, an immense tunnel, the ribbed metal ceiling like a cylinder above them that curved away into a dense mass of largely empty shelving. Sometimes you found corpses, mummified and dried, like the husks of cocoons after the butterfly's gone. The air tasted familiar to him from breaking into similar establishments, sealed for a century. Dry and flat, with a hint of iron. JB approached Doc, reloading his Steyr.
They're firing that thing at the door, but it looks to be strong enough to withstand anything short of an anti-tank shell.
There another way out of here, Doc?
No. Not like you mean, Mr. Dick, so dear me, no.
This ain't like no stockpile I ever seen.
That, madam, is because it is not a stockpile. Oh, there were many of those, most still hidden beneath swamps or earth slips or hot spots. But this is a redoubt. There are many of these also, but I do not believe many have ever been discovered. They would appear valueless to those who do not know. And those who did know are so long gone.
Makes sense, Doc. We're trapped in here. If that's the only door and those sons of bitches are waiting for us, then how do we get out? Are there food and arms in here?
No. Perhaps some water, but it will be brackish and foul. Perhaps some eater tablets. No arms. That is not the purpose of the redoubt.
Then what is, Doc?
This is the gateway to Hades, Mr. Corder. Look upon the wall where Cerberus himself stands watch. The gateway to the river, to the deeps, to the darks, to the high mountain. All is dust.
Let it lie, Ryan. No more help there for a while.
Yeah. Well, we can't go out, so we best go in.
Hun took Doc's arm, leading him along in the middle of the shrunken party. First Ryan, then Oki and Hen, the green-haired girl and the old man, Christy and Finnegan, and J.B. Dix at the rear. Eight of them, bearing the faint torch of the future into the past. They walked past the picture that had caught Doc's gaze. Garishly painted, with a crude skill like a comic book illustration, it showed a slavering black hound. Three heads grew out of a single corded neck, their jaws wide open, fire and blood gushing between yellow teeth. The eyes were crimson, the colors bright despite the creature's age. Underneath, in an ornate Gothic script was written the single word, Cerberus. Apart from that one picture, the place was bare. Ryan had seen stockpiles that had been ravaged, but they were always a total shambles with rotting food and torn containers everywhere. This was different. It was as if a team of men had carefully gone through the entire place, stripping everything off walls, removing every stick of furniture. Nothing remained. Nothing beyond the stale flat air. They headed inward, toward the bowels of the mountain. The walls remained curved, with strips of corrugated steel supports running clear over the roof. The tunnel that they followed ran straight for several hundred paces, with about a dozen chambers opening off it. Each one was stripped bare. Some of the walls showed the faint marks where cabinets or desks had once stood against them. Out of habit, Ryan flicked on the rad counter, clipped to the inside of his long coat, by the lapel. It produced the background crackling it always gave out in the Deathlands, but nothing here to worry about. There was a deadliness in the redoubt that oppressed the spirit. Doc's eyes had glazed over again. Ryan wished to the bottom of his heart that the old man hadn't lost so much of his mind under the tender care of Teague and Strasser. He was absolutely certain that Doc held the key to limitless secrets. How could he have known about the fog and Cerberus and the code to the door that had saved all their lives?
Should I call in the cone? If we go much hellfire deeper, they won't be able to hear it.
No point, Hen. That door in this concrete will stop anything getting out.
Oh, great. T-junction ahead. Should we split up?
Nix. Eight people isn't a big enough group to divide and then hope to survive a firefight. Despite what Doc said, there might be another entrance. Or the Indians might be able to force the main door now that they've got the added incentive of pursuing us inside. We'll go to the left.
They wandered along the snaking passage for some minutes until it ended abruptly in a rockfall. It looked as if half the hill had come bursting in through the roof. There was a doorway partly buried under the stone, and Ryan scrambled up to push it open. It moved back uneasily on warped hinges, and he glimpsed light and some wooden pallets.
Something here.
Old stores left behind.
Christy, JB, follow me. The rest hang here. Get our back in case of attackers.
It was a corridor with a rounded ceiling, made of rows of stressed metal ribs. On the right were dozens of stacked boxes, with a few more piled loosely on the other side. At the farthest end, he could see the red and silver of the sky, patched with purple chem clouds. The end of the cave was open to the world. Some of the boxes had been opened, and Ryan and JB began to investigate. Christy walked to the opening, less than 50 paces away. Ryan had taken a gun from its box, wiping the grease off on the sleeve of his long, fur-trimmed coat. JB, sitting on one of the containers, peered at a bizarre weapon by his feet. It was like a large pistol with a massive ammunition drum that had chambers for a dozen rounds.
Blasters.
What the hell does it fire?
Seen a pic of one. Colt M207, 40mm grenade launcher. 12 different grenades. Laser sight and high-low propulsion system. I might come back for it once we've scouted around.
Check this one out. Close assault blaster, Heckler & Koch 12-gauge scatter gun. Night scope and image intensifier. Be good against stickies in the dark. Nice. Yeah, might take some of these babies on the way out. If we get out.
We're not getting out this way. Landslip's taken off the edge of the whole mountain, clean as a knife. Drop straight down to the gorge, and that's a long way. Not a hope.
They turned away from the small stockpile and rejoined the others in the corridor. Ryan told them briefly what they'd found and that there was no way out.
I believe I had already mentioned that probability, Mr. Calder.
Yes, you did, Doc. Let's go. Retrace our steps.
Somebody want to tell me why am I carrying this radio? I mean, if we ain't using it, then why in blazing shit am I humping it on?
They reached the T-junction and took the other corridor. It went a couple of hundred paces, then forked like a sidewinder's tongue. The lights had failed in the one end, but burned brightly from the roof along to the right.
That way, right.
As they went, they checked off all the rooms, on the chance that one of them might contain some clue, some indication of what had happened in this place. The corridor ended abruptly. A door of vanadium-type steel ran ceiling to floor, its surface polished and gleaming, throwing back their own reflections as if it mocked them. There was no sign of any lock or control, just smooth walls on either side.
Try that other way? Where the lights had gone out?
Waste of time, my emerald locked elfling. That corridor curls all the way around the redoubt complex and returns behind that rockfall. There is nothing there.
Just how do you know all this, Doc? Maybe this is the place and time to tell us.
This is a place and a time, sir, but not the time or the place. When that might be, I do not know. It is beyond my control.
You knew about the main door to the redoubt. How about this one?
Ryan casually allowed the barrel of his gun to move toward the old man. Doc noted the gesture.
Ah, Mr. Calder, a threat. Over the years, I have become overly familiar with threats.
The door?
It is the last door before the gate.
Ryan closed his only eye, fighting for control. There were times when a great scarlet mist drenched his senses, and an entirely insensate rage possessed him. There was the temptation to take this doddering imbecile with his antique clothes and rich baritone voice, take him and rip the seamed old face from the skull. Things were tough on Ryan now. The realization that Christy Roth was probably a mutie had already shaken him. He'd fallen in love with a mutie. Once this was over, he would need to clear his mind on that one. But for now...
Can you open the door, Doc?
If I were within, then it would be a matter of the utmost simplicity.
Within what?
Inside the door, Stu.
It cannot be opened from out here.
Ryan looked at JB. A light of mutual recognition sparked in their eyes.
Over, under, or around.
What?
One of Trader's pet sayings. Used it when we ran into a problem we couldn't get at.
Over's impossible, under as well, without digging gear.
Go back and radio the Warwag for help?
What about going in the side, in that room there? Maybe the walls aren't as thick. Worth a try.
The room was a bare office with only a grease mark on one wall showing where someone had sat and leaned back against it. The first IX bomb broke the outer layer of the walls, exposing hollow cavities of concrete and rusting iron rods. The room was perfect to contain and compound an explosion. More grenades opened up a great hole in the far wall, clean through to the other side. The smoke and bitter fumes took some time to clear in that underground expanse of still air. Ryan and JB went first, checking that the main structure was not about to topple in on top of them.
Looks good?
Yeah, I'll call the... What was that?
Main door?
Could be. If it is, we'd best find a good ambush spot. We'll need it. Else those bastards can starve us out.
Hey, did you guys hear that? They've managed to blow the main door.
We'll stand and fight. Only choice we got.
If the gate is still functioning, then there is that option. The Maker said it would last 1,000 years, but others have made such a boast and been proven wrong.
What is this nuke-shitting gate? Where is it?
It is the alternative way out of the redoubt, and it lies through that hole.
They all scrambled through successfully, though Finnegan managed to tear a sleeve on one of the jagged pieces of twisted metal. Inside, the rad counter on Ryan's coat began to make louder noises, indicating a marginally higher count of radiation. But it was still not enough to worry them, and Ryan switched the device off. It was like nothing any of them had ever seen. Great banks of dials and flickering lights, red, green, and amber, with thousands of white switches. Circuits hummed and crackled, and loops of tape moved erratically in a row of machines. Occasionally, they had found stockpiles that held ranks of electrical machines that none of them could figure out. But this was something else. Doc pointed with a bony forefinger past the consoles to a doorway.
through there.
Again, Ryan led them through into an anteroom. It had a polished table on one side and four empty shelves on the other. Beyond it was another door.
The gate is there, in that next room. Are we ready for it? It is the Gate of Gates. From this point, the hills will become more and more shallow, but the valleys will become more and more deep.
We lost him again.
Once Doc's mind begins to wander like this, it might be hours before we get the next sensible sentence out of him. By my reckoning, we've got about 30 minutes before the Indians track us down.
Ryan opened the far door, hand on the butt of his pistol, and faced yet another door, made of what looked like smoked glass. There was a neat panel by the side of the door with a variety of numbered and lettered buttons, some glowing brightly. Above it was a notice in angular maroon lettering.
Entry absolutely forbidden to all but B-12 cleared personnel. Matt Trans.
Matt Trans? Matter transmitter? Damnedest thing. I'd heard they had something like this.
How does it work?
Who knows? Chance is it doesn't work at all. When the long chill came, they were working on a lot of clever things like this. I read they were close to...
Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen, please, coming through.
Doc pushed past them all, sweeping open the door and bowing low.
Here be dragons, lords and ladies. Enter and leave.
It was a chamber, six-sided, all the walls of the same brown-tinted glass. The floor was patterned with metallic discs, raised very slightly. The pattern was repeated in the ceiling. The opening of the door triggered some sort of mechanism, and a few of the discs began to glow faintly in a seemingly random form. A faint mist appeared in the room, swirling and darting.
Doc, what's this fog? If this is some kind of trap...
No cause for consternation. Follow me, please. Around and around the little wheel goes, and where it stops... Come in.
Nothing more happened. The mist coiled about the cracked boots, rising no farther than the knees. More of the discs were gleaming with a silvery light, and Ryan could hear the faintest of humming sounds.
Oh, hell. Why not?
Ryan stepped in, followed by all the others. Doc immediately leapt and slammed the door shut so hard that the room vibrated.
Off we go!
The lights flashed a pattern that dazzled and forced the intruders to close their eyes. Ryan was aware that the fog had thickened, climbing all about them, filling their lungs. There was a dreadful pressure in his ears. For a moment, it felt as if a huge fist was reaching inside his head and squeezing his brain like a sponge. His body grew light, and he knew that he was passing out. Ryan's last thought as he fought his way into unconsciousness was that he should have killed Doc days ago. Even that was swallowed by an impenetrable blackness. Ryan opened his eye. There was a mild pain across his temples, like the morning after a night of drinking home brew. His pulse was up, and so was his breathing. He lay still, aware of a tingling sensation at the tips of toes and fingers. He lifted his hands and touched his face, feeling a faint numbness, and his black, curly hair bristled with static electricity. He closed his eye and opened it again, blinking up at a ceiling of patterned metal discs that glowed, a glow that was fading even as he looked up at it. He tried to work out just how he felt. His stomach swirled as if he'd been riding Warwag 1 over the bumpiest road in all Deathlands, and his brain relayed the curious sensation of having been sucked into itself and then dragged through a vacuum before being rammed back into his skull. But he lived. Whatever that bastard machine was supposed to have done, it had failed. The trap had not been properly sprung. Maybe over the decades, the gas or poison or whatever had lost its power. He thought again that he ought to kill Doc. Now, without any further hesitation.
Ryan? Are you all... Oh! Oh, mother, my head aches. Oh.
Ryan sat up, looking around, seeing all his comrades either slumped unconscious or showing the first signs of recovering. Christy blinked, trying to clear her head. She licked her lips, brushing a hand through the tumbling hair.
How'd you feel?
I felt better. What was it? Death trap?